don't have anything that can hurt me.
Maybe I do.
Kanan felt for the holder on his left leg, where his lightsaber was hidden.
Nonsense,
Vidian said, waving his hand dismissively.
If you had anything, you'd have used it already, right?
Hera looked searchingly at Kanan as Vidian turned back to the console. Kanan began to reach for his secret weapon, but then he paused. Something, somewhere told him, no, not that, not now, not yet.
Forget him, Twi'lek,
the cyborg said, reaching for the console.
He doesn't have what it takes to stop me.
But I do,
said Captain Sloane, hologram flickering back into view. Her expression was icy, her eyes narrow.
Ultimatum gunnery control, target the transmission tower and fire.
Now Kanan moved. Moved the way his instincts told him to go. He dived not at Vidian, but at Hera, bowling her over even as one of the viewports behind the count lit up like 100 suns. If there was a sound, Kanan didn't hear it. There was only light and motion and heat as Forager wrenched violently under the impact of the Star Destroyer's turbolaser barrage. Rolling away from Hera, it took what seemed like an eternity for his eyes to adjust. The lights were out in the command center, and Vidian was staggering around like one caught in a hurricane. Kanan realized why, looking out the windows. It wasn't just Ultimatum now, but the TIE fighters pummeling Forager's energy shield. The vessel was in one piece, for the moment, but every strike on the shield shook everything inside madly. Somehow, Vidian reached the console again. Kanan was ready to go after him, even shaken. But this time it was Hera who grabbed him, keeping him down close to the floor. He saw the reason. Forager's superstructure was holding, but the transmission tower, visible through the room's viewports, shook itself to pieces under a direct hit on the shield from Ultimatum. Sloane had called her shot, Kanan realized, and her gunners had done their jobs. His chance to destroy Cinda gone, Vidian howled and turned. He ran back through the main entrance, paying Kanan and Hera no mind. Finding his blaster on the floor nearby, Kanan rose to follow Vidian. Behind him, Hera called out, "Kanan, no!" He looked back. She was still getting to her knees near the door he had dragged Zaluna through, beneath the catwalk that had been damaged earlier.
"We have to get to a..."
Time stopped for Kanan, and then it started again slowly. He saw everything. He saw the TIE bomber outside, unloosing its torpedo at Forager's energy shield. He saw the bridge shake violently in response. He saw the heavy Durasteel catwalk, already weakened from Hera's forklift entrance, snap from its moorings. He saw it fall toward Hera. Hera, not oblivious, but in no position to get out of the way. He recognized the obstacles between them, the debris and the bodies lying across the fastest route. Without thinking, he swept them away with his mind, clearing a path. No barrier blocked him from Hera. And he moved. He moved faster than when he'd saved Yelkin, faster than he'd remembered moving in years, all in the hope of grabbing her and diving beneath the doorway. Except time moved faster too, faster than his hopes. He reached her too late, just as he'd been too late to save Master Balaba. The Force had been too late for many that day, but it was with him now, as he slid to the floor by Hera's side. Hera, knowing the danger she was in, put her hand up as if to shoo him away to safety. Kanan looked instead upward, waving with his hand and suspending the giant catwalk in mid-air, centimeters from his and Hera's heads. She stared at it, dumbfounded, and then at him. Self-conscious, Kanan shoved at the air, pushing the levitated mass off to the side. It landed with a colossal crash. Forager shuddered again under the Imperial attack. The view outside was a thing of perversely wondrous beauty, he thought, flashes of light before the moon as the starfighters made their runs. But it all paled before the look he saw here in the darkness, in Hera's eyes.
But,
she started to say,
but you're...
With a wry smile, Kanan put his finger to her mouth.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
She looked at him for a long moment in wonderment before understanding came to her. And a gentle smile came to her face. She nodded.
Let's go.
Chapter 55.
The life pod soared from Forager. Kanan hunched over the small circular viewport and looked back at the collector ship. Several other small pods were jettisoning away, he saw, and the Empire was watching every one.
TIE fighter on our tail, he said.
We don't have a tail. We barely have an engine.
Hera guided the small stick directing the vehicle. It was about the only control she had.
I think the TIE's just following.
I know.
There wasn't anything to do. Kanan turned from the viewport and returned to dabbing gingerly at Zaluna's burnt face with a Bacta-infused pad from the medpack. Ultimatum was still pounding away at Forager. As soon as it finished, Kanan knew, it would likely begin sweeping up all the life pods. Sloane would be looking for Vidian, but she'd find Kanan and company instead.
You still can't see?
Kanan asked Zaluna.
There's nothing good to see anyway,
she replied. Vidian waded through a river of acid. It was everywhere on the factory portion of Forager, ankle deep in some places, waist high in others. It was destroying the flooring and had already eaten into the bulkheads below. He anticipated explosive decompression at any minute. The crossing had started as a panicked mechanical run, and then slowed to a hideous slog as his legs wasted away to skeletal struts. His arms had been further damaged, too, in the trip. There had been no other choice, no other way to his destination. He'd remembered something. The intruders had come in a Baradium hauler. It was intact, he saw through the few still-functioning surveillance cams, ready to go. He would use it, issuing the one-trip life pods. The freighter might be lost in the confusion, he hoped. He might be able to make it to one of the drill sites on Cinda, where there was still time to detonate the explosives and meet the Emperor's quota. He would find a way. This was Baron Dance doing somehow. It had to be. It was impossible to imagine a few would-be rebels and a substitute captain could have reduced his reputation and career to shambles. Detonating the moon, he was sure, would restore him. Between the moon and the sunward side of Gorse, the Emperor would have Thorolide for 1,000 fleets. And if it didn't, the freighter still had hyperdrive and a full cargo of Baradium 357. That was an important resource, and something to build upon someplace else if necessary. He had come back from nothingness before. Perhaps it wouldn't take 20 years this time. But he wouldn't have to do that. He would finish the project. Vidian staggered on failing limbs into the landing bay. The place was a mess of fallen beams and bulkheads, but the troublesome freighter was right where it was supposed to be, ramp open. He thought it ironic that it, of all things, would be his deliverance. Reaching the ramp, Vidian looked out through the landing bay's magnetic field. Forager, tumbling out of control now, was turning to face Cinda. Convenient for a quick trip, Vidian thought. Efficient. Vidian staggered up the freighter's ramp, and then could go no farther. He looked down. There on the landing deck, slumped against the side of the ramp, was Skelly. The man was a battered, bloodied mess, and yet he had summoned the energy to reach for Vidian's leg strut as he'd walked up the ramp. Skelly clutched Vidian's one-time ankle now in his right hand. The Count tried to shake him off, but couldn't.
Release me!
That one doesn't let go,
Skelly said. He coughed.
don't mind me. I've just been out here looking at the moon.
Don't get used to it,
Vidian said, straining to keep climbing. But his acid-damaged legs couldn't give him any leverage.
Sorry, Vidian. Blowing things up is my job. Guild rules, you know.
Skelly shifted around, and now Vidian saw the device in his other hand, connected to a long microfilament line. Vidian's eyes followed the line up and into the doorway of the ship.
I told Kanan we wouldn't need my bag of tricks, Skelly said. But I didn't say I wouldn't come back for it.
Realization came quickly.
No! No, don't!
I don't take orders from you!
Then Skelly looked out the landing bay entrance at Cinda. He went.
I saved you, sweetheart.
He pushed the button. The flash blinded Kanan at first. The explosion began at the rear of Forager, quickly consuming the landing decks and ripping forward. His eyes adjusting, Kanan recognized the familiar characteristic color of a Baradium explosion. But this was bigger and more energetic than he'd ever seen.
Hera, go!
There was little she could do, except put the life pod's re-entry heat shield between them and the blast. The TIE fighter pursuing them was slower to react. Superheated particles from the explosion ripped through the vessel's hexagonal wings, causing the starfighter to tear violently apart. A shockwave, comprising not air, but plasma and matter, expanding outward from the blast zone, slammed into their life pod. Shaken by the impact, Hera fought with the controls, angling the life pod to catch the wave. All around, Kanan saw more effects of the blast. Less fortunate life pods were disintegrating, as were their TIE pursuers. And the electrostatic towers that had been Forager's spokes were flung off in all directions, including toward Ultimatum. A long, ragged beam slammed off the surface of the Star Destroyer's hull, opening a fiery gash. It was enough distraction for Hera, who took the chance to make for Gorse's atmosphere. She powered down the interior cabin lights, and the life pod went dark as it soared, just another piece of debris. In the darkness, Hera reoriented the vessel so the passengers could look back at Forager's remains. There wasn't much to see. Kanan had no doubt that Expedient with its shipload of Baradium 357 was the reason.
Very naughty baby, Kanan said. Zaluna shuddered. She hadn't seen the explosion, but she'd felt it.
I was hoping Skelly might have survived earlier, that he might have made it.
Hera held her. It's okay. We got out. Maybe he did, too.
No, Kanan said, thinking aloud. He didn't.
Somberly, Hera looked out at the firestorm in space.
The landing bay must have taken a hit from the Star Destroyer.
Kanan shook his head. No. Skelly did that.
If you didn't see it,
Zaluna asked,
how do you know?
Hera studied Kanan for a moment. He had gone silent.
He just knows,
she finally said.
He just knows.
She turned back to the controls. The life pod sank into the clouds of Gorse's endless night.
Final phase. Damage assessment.
Emperor's robotic mining plan for Dayside brings new era to Gorse. Baron Danth granted oversight of industrial region. Vidian's holonet site goes dark as disease relapse claims him.
Headlines. Imperial Holo News. Gorse Edition. Chapter 56. Apart from her promotion ceremonies, Sloane seldom had use for her dress uniform. But this night was different, and it was always night on Gorse. The regional governor was here in the mayor's regal residence, easily the nicest place on the planet. she recognized several other Imperial captains and an admiral. He had brought with him a Moff, one of the highest authorities in the government. They were all here to drink and gab and celebrate the most important event in the history of industrial production of Thorolide, the opening of the sunward side of Gorse to Baron Danth's heat-resistant mining drones.
It was a huge moment for the world,
liable to transform its economy in amazing ways. Gorse's refineries would be necessary. Not even the Emperor would destroy the moon and devastate the planet for a one-time benefit, when the long-term reward was much richer. And it was all being directly attributed to a discovery by Sloan and Ultimatum's science team. It wasn't, of course. She had simply passed along Vidian's secret report to that effect. But she was being given the credit, and would take it, alongside her crew. Her crew. Unrelated to Vidian's machinations, Captain Carlson's posting had just been permanently awarded to her. She was glad Commander Chamas had sent Deltic and her co-workers home to the ship immediately after the commendation presentation, before they embarrassed her in front of anyone else. But they were her embarrassment now. Ultimatum was hers. And the proceedings were only beginning.
Later, they would all ride the luxurious shuttle to Cinda, restored once again to its status as a tourist destination.
The zone damaged by the test blast was only one of many former natural preserves on the moon. The Empire had wasted no time in reopening another.
It would be made available for visits from the rich and powerful, those who had served the Emperor well, and those whose influence he sought to court.
That includes pretty much everyone in this room, she thought. Taking a drink from the tray of a CG glass serving droid, Sloane thought back on the events of the days since Vidian's death. An intermediary from the Emperor had met with her to follow up on the whole situation. Sloane had spoken completely and truthfully, of course, and he had seen no problem with her testimony. But he had expressed puzzlement over her tale of the young pilot speaking to her in the dark. This Kanan was no agent of the Emperor's, she was told. It didn't make sense, and neither of them had pressed the issue. Did Vidian have another rival loose somewhere in the Imperial system? Or was it someone else entirely?
Sloane hadn't shaken the feeling that there was another player out there.
Someone allied with the young pilot, pulling the strings. She wondered if she would ever find out. There was something she had found out. She had learned that someone on Ultimatum's senior staff had queried Transept about Lemuel Tharsa on their arrival. She hadn't authorized it, and it made no sense that Vidian would have done it. She realized what had happened, and outside, on the balcony, she spotted the men responsible. Nibiru Chamas drank there with Baron Danth. Danth saw her and smiled. He was even more radiant and robust in person, she saw.
My good captain, the Baron said, raising his glass. Please join us.
I am yours to command, she said.
And so was Chamas. He'd sent the inquiry about Tharsa, she'd realized, using his authority as an Ultimatum officer to help Danth investigate Vidian's phantom consultant. She wondered how long Chamas had been on the Baron's payroll as an informant. Smiling darkly, Chamas raised his glass of wine to her. It didn't look like his first. No wonder, for she had supplanted his position with his patron. Danth had been grateful, and she saw his hand in the Ultimatum staffing move. Perhaps Chamas had sought her chair. If so, then no matter. This was the way things worked in the Empire. She stepped to the railing with the Baron. Chamas, realizing his glass was empty, excused himself.
It was humid as always on Gorse, and none of the visitors were out here. But she'd gotten used to it.
She looked up at Cinda. Well past full now. It would continue to shine, and to set Gorse to rocking every so often. And one day,
it would probably tear itself apart and rain down as Vidian intended. But it wouldn't be in her lifetime, and tonight she planned to enjoy it.
Baron Danth watched her as she stared up at it.
I do thank you for alerting me.
I was alerting the Emperor.
Of course, Danth chuckled. Such a life we lead. Did you ever think that stabbing people in the back would be a way to get ahead?
It's the way the game is played, Sloane said, a little surprised at his openness. I prefer flying my starship.
And defending the Empire against whatever,
he grinned.
Have you learned any more about the others that were involved?
Nothing.
He gave a derisive sniff.
I don't think we need worry too much. A single rebellious act isn't the start of anything. This was a blip, a glitch in the system, nothing more.
Maybe.
Or maybe they'd awakened a sleeping Gundark. Sloane decided there would be opportunities for advancement in a galaxy like that, too.
To interesting missions ahead.
She clinked her glass against his. The sun rose, and nobody died. Zeluna had lived her entire life where that was impossible. This was a different world, with a different sun. And while she couldn't see it, she could feel its rays warming her body. She could feel the cool air of night gently giving way, hear the dew on the grass crunching as she walked. And all around, she could smell the flowers of the garden waking up. Kanan had left them after their return to Gorse, thinking it best to meet again here on this sparsely populated agricultural planet sectors away. Zeluna didn't know the name of the planet Hera had brought her to, but then she'd never asked. She was taking her first step into a new world, a world disconnected from the grid. It still wasn't clear that the Empire was looking for her part in the Forager affair. Before bringing her from Gorse to the agrarian world on her fancy ship, Hera had stopped by Zeluna's apartment for her things. It showed signs of having been entered by the landlord, but it hadn't been ransacked. And certainly no video surveillance imagery from aboard Forager identifying Zeluna had survived. The news had made Zeluna wonder. Maybe she hadn't been the focus of any planetary dragnet along with the others. Maybe it had been all in her mind. Maybe she could have come back from her suspension and gone back to work at Transept as if nothing had happened. But she couldn't, because something had happened. A lot of somethings. And it meant she could never return to that life, even if she wanted to. And she didn't. Still, she was glad that life on Gorse wouldn't be quite so bad anymore for those she'd left. The miraculous news of thoralide in quantity on Gorse's dayside meant that work was already going ahead, using legions of heat-resistant droids Baron Danth had ready and waiting. No further damage would be done to Cinda or the places where people lived on Gorse. The miners, by far the roughest customers on the world, would migrate elsewhere. And while the refinery work would stay, the Empire now controlled its own firm in Moonglow, a place where a far-sighted Lal Grolic had, in life, made safety improvements that would now become the model for all the other factories there. The Empire had gotten the efficiency it wanted out of Count Vidian's trip after all. And yet people would be safer all around. Hera had particularly liked that thought.
Victory through unintended consequences, she'd said.
The house they had found for Zeluna was abandoned and half in ruin, but it was cheap and quiet. The person Hera bought it from had said the garden out back had been planted by another older woman, long since dead. It was direly in need of care no one would give. Most of the planet's settlers had moved to places like Gorse to find work.
Brushing her fingers against the blooms, Zeluna couldn't imagine a sillier prospect.
She felt for the steps beneath her feet. There was a tree at the end of the path. Walking up to it reminded her of the cemetery at Beggar's Hill, with its large monuments.
"Keep walking, Zal, and you'll bump into it." Zaluna smiled.
"You're still here, Kanan."
"Enjoying the weather. Gorse was a steam bath."
Zaluna felt his hand on her shoulder.
"You doing all right?"
"Better than ever," she said.
She began to walk past the tree, with Kanan's hand still on her shoulder.
"What do you think of my garden?"
"It's good," Kanan replied. "You know you can get those eyes treated, right? To get your sight back?"
"Like Vidian?"
Zaluna chuckled and shook her head.
"No, I think I've seen enough. I have a place to live, and there's a little girl who visits daily to help me with things. But I'll be helping myself soon."
She gestured backward.
"And look, I have a tree."
Kanan laughed.
"I'm thinking it's Skelly's tree," she said. "A nice monument, don't you think?"
"Well, there are some twisted clinging vines over there I would have thought of instead."
Zaluna lifted her head to face the sky and sighed.
"No, Skelly's ashes are probably still back there, raining down on Cinder. I think he'd like that."
Kanan didn't respond for a moment, and then...
"That works, too."
She heard someone coming up the walk from the house.
"I'm ready to go,"
Hera said.
"Always on the move,"
Zaluna said. She felt Hera's hands on hers.
"Are you sure this is what you want, Zal? You have skills. There are others you could help."
Zaluna shook her head.
"I can't save Heto. Not now. I know what you're up against, and it's beyond me. Wherever he is, Heto would never want me to risk my life trying to save him. And if he's in a bad place, he'd probably rather imagine me living somewhere nice like this. It's certainly better than where we were."
Kanan laughed.
"She's got you there."
Hera hugged her. "Take care. And thank you."
Zaluna walked to the edge of the gravel road with them.
"And now," Kanan said, "I get the pleasure of walking this gentle lady back to this mysterious starship of hers."
Kanan had been dropped off by a tramp freighter and had yet to get a look at what she and Hera had arrived in.
"I see,"
Zaluna asked.
"Are you traveling together?"
"We haven't discussed it,"
Hera was quick to say. Zaluna smiled.
"You'd better take him with you,"
the woman said,
"or I'll put him to work."
She turned and walked back toward the garden. Chapter 57. Kanan and Hera walked the long sylvan road from Zaluna's house.
"I think she'll be fine,"
Hera said for the third time.
"The medic I took her to said she's healing nicely."
"Oh, sure,"
he replied again. They had done an excellent job of talking about nothing on the walk. Indeed, since the life pod landed on Gorse. They'd parted quickly then, allowing Kanan time to leave a trail, placing him on Gorse during all the previous action. Sloane might know his name, but as far as Imperial surveillance was concerned, he was just one more suicide flyer who'd left Gorse when the work dried up. They approached the small hangar she had rented outside the little town. Not turning toward him, she asked,
"So, what's next for you?"
"Well, you know me. A force always in motion."
"I do know you."
She kept walking.
"So what do you think about what Zaluna said?"
"What, going with you?" Kanan shrugged. "Well, you know what I've said. You're great company."
He eyed her.
"But I don't think you're looking for a traveling companion, are you?"
"Not like that."
She stopped outside the door to the closed hangar, and he did the same. She looked up at him.
"What's happening to the galaxy is serious, and I mean to do something about it. If you mean only to mind your own business,
she said, offering her hand. "Then I wish you luck in your travels."
He looked down at her hand, and then at her.
"I still haven't seen this ship."
"And you won't. The fewer people see it, the better."
He scratched his beard.
"It sounds pretty large. Must be a lot on it to keep up."
She stared at him for a moment and nodded.
"Yes, there is."
"You might need a crew for something like that."
He looked at her pointedly.
"Not a traveling companion, not a revolutionary. Crew."
He thrust his hand into hers. She flashed a shrewd smile and shook his hand.
"I can live with that."
Kanan turned and clapped his hands together.
"Great. I just hope it's not as big a mess as the ship I just left."
"Well, you're going to love this,"
she said, opening the door to the hangar. So, Kanan Jarrus was a Jedi. Or rather, he had been in training to become one when the Emperor betrayed them all. It was just a guess. He hadn't said anything more to Hera about that moment aboard Forager. It was possible that he was just some random person who happened to have the ability to use the Force. Someone who, in a rush of adrenaline, had reached out to the universe for a great feat, and who had seen his prayer answered. But Hera didn't think so. When she was a girl, the Jedi had helped her people in the Clone Wars. Although she had been too young then to remember specific events from those days, her father had told her time and again of the Jedi in action. Later, she'd watched many historical holos, all of them now banned, of Jedi in action. She understood that Jedi abilities weren't some suit of super-powered armor that someone could leave at home or abandon in a garbage can. The Force influenced and enhanced every action of a person touched with it, whether they were conscious of it or not. And no one but a Jedi could do the things she had seen Kanan do. The brawl in Shaketown, the escape on the hoverbus, the battle with Vidian. In each, she'd seen a man acting at the outer edge of human performance. And in all cases, she'd somehow thought him capable of doing even more. It seemed as if he'd identified a line that he would not cross and had stuck to it. Kanan had gravitated toward a dangerous calling on Gorse because to him, it wasn't dangerous. And it was a solitary trade, so he secretly could call on his prodigious talents if danger struck. She suspected that described all the odd jobs he'd taken on in his life. It was the strategy of someone trained in a certain discipline, and yet forbidden from practicing it. That, his nomadic nature, and his lack of family ties all added up. Kanan probably wasn't yet a Jedi when the massacre came. She doubted he even had a lightsaber. All he had in the galaxy was one bag of clothing, and if he'd hidden it in there, she would never go looking for it. Hera wondered how young Jedi became apprenticed. She didn't know. And such information was harder to come by now than just about anything else. Where had he been when the great betrayal had happened? Who had he been with? Had someone warned him? And did that someone yet exist? Kanan might tell her someday. Or he might not. She was all right with that. The Emperor had disenfranchised souls across the galaxy, people from all walks of life. A reluctant near Jedi was just one more of their countless number. Many people would be required for a rebellion to work, all contributing their unique talents. All would be equally important in their own ways. He obviously liked her starship, she could see as he walked around it. That was good. He was also smitten with her, she could tell. And she was all right with that, too. She didn't want to tell him that her war had already begun, and that in war there was no time for anything else. He would probably understand that eventually. No, she thought. Things would be fine the way they were. Kanan would be a great asset to her in the days to come,
even if he never returned to the Jedi ways. But she couldn't help but wonder, what would happen if he did?
Kanan Jarrus was in love. The ghost, Hera had called it. It was the ship he'd admired as it passed him on the way to Cinda days earlier. And it was a marvel. Roughly hexagonal in shape, it was a light freighter with lots of modifications. All of them, as near as he could tell, improvements. The two main engines jutting out the back were top-notch pieces of equipment. Better than anything he'd seen on Gorse or anywhere else. A cockpit sat front and center, above another bubble housing a turret for a forward gunner. It had symmetry many Corellian cargo ships lacked, and even a small excursion module mounted aft. After piloting dingy freighters and explosives haulers, after riding in nasty commercial liners and the holds of mining ships, Kanan found Ghost a breath of pure oxygen. He would kill to fly it. And as Hera had joked, he might have to. It was hers. All hers. That was fine. He'd welcome the ride. A nightmare had begun for everyone years earlier, and it continued in almost every way that mattered. The galaxy hadn't awoken from it yet, and maybe it never would. But Kanan had always been about going to perdition in style, and Ghost was a great way to get there. Particularly with the company. She was watching him as he admired the starship. Hera had hidden it well, constantly looking away or fiddling with some part. But Kanan was well trained in knowing when female eyes were on him. Things had changed there, too. Hera had been mildly curious about him before, but the events on Forager had definitely influenced her attitude toward him. That, or he had somehow gotten a lot more attractive. Either reason was fine. Any excuse to be in her company was a good one, as long as she didn't push the matter. Hera knew one little thing about his past now, which was one more than he knew about hers. He hoped she'd figure out it had no bearing on who he was. If delivering pinpricks to the Empire was what gave her a thrill, he could certainly help her without getting into all that.
"Perhaps the answer will come to you in another form,"
Master Balaba had said years earlier when he'd asked what a masterless Jedi would do with his time. He'd sought answers in dangerous jobs and travel, in cantinas and carousing. Hera was a new and very different answer. As good a way to spend his time as any. The people who had taught Kanan as a child had left him with a handful of skills and some parting advice. Nothing more. That had been their total legacy. Heeding their instructions was all he owed them. He would continue to avoid Coruscant, to avoid detection. He didn't understand what he needed to stay strong for, but he'd continue to defend himself against anyone who challenged him. And the Force? Well, it might be with him, or it might not. Kanan would get by either way. He always had. He slapped the underside of the Ghost and winked as he made for the ramp. "Let's go somewhere." A Note from Lucasfilm by Dave Filoni, executive producer and supervising director of the animated series Star Wars Rebels. Star Wars is an incredibly creative galaxy, where storytellers have sent Jedi on countless missions, explored numerous planets, and discovered hidden treasures since 1977. I grew up with the original trilogy, and as the years passed by, I read the books and comics, I played the games, I saw the re-releases, and I could not believe it when one day I sat in a theater and the screen said, Episode 1. It was a day I had waited for a long, long time. I went to all the prequels on opening night, stood in lines like we all did, went to the Midnight Madness toy releases. I really enjoyed the community that had grown up around the Star Wars universe.
Little did I know that before the final prequel film was released, I would move to Northern California and begin work on Star Wars: The Clone Wars right alongside the maker, George Lucas. I felt like I had won some Star Wars lottery. But I also felt a tremendous responsibility to all the people I knew who loved Star Wars to make sure that I got it right. As my own personal Jedi training began, I always had George there to answer the deeper questions, to make certain that we got it right, that we truly made Star Wars the way he wanted it. He used to joke with my crew and me, telling us that he had been teaching us the ways of the Force, so that one day, when he retired, Star Wars could keep on going without him. I'm not sure we ever believed him, until it happened. So how do we move forward? And how do we make sure we get it right? Very simply, we trust in the Force. And we trust one another. We came together as a group and found the best talent. People who, like you and me, love Star Wars and want to make it great. Who want to capture the feeling that it gave all of us, that inspired all of us. More than at any other time in its existence, new Star Wars stories are being told every day. More important, the old concept of what is canon and what isn't is gone. And from this point forward, our stories and characters all exist in the same universe. The key creatives who work on the films, television, comic books, video games, and novels are all connected creatively for the first time in the history of the Star Wars universe. A New Dawn is a result of this method of story collaboration here at Lucasfilm. As executive producers of Star Wars Rebels, Greg Weissman, Simon Kinberg, and I had input on the story and characters working with author John Jackson Miller. I even got to make comments on the look of Kanan and Hera for the cover. Maybe a small detail to some, but it was exciting to be a part of that process, and to know the characters would remain true to their intended design. I really hope you enjoyed this story, and that it enriched your experience and knowledge of the characters in Star Wars Rebels. There are still countless worlds to visit, countless aliens to meet, and with the incredible talent we have coming to work at Lucasfilm, the way forward looks clear. Last, I must thank you. Whether this is your first Star Wars adventure or one of many over the years, thank you. Thank you for your dedication to and passion for the Star Wars galaxy. Because of fans like you around the world, the Force will be with us always. Dave Filoni.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Aaron Blank. Star Wars, A New Dawn is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2014. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.